Hello, everyone. Good morning. Welcome to this session. Will be delivered by Dr. Will Gardner on the topic of the impact of frequency and contagious and pricing catastrophe excess of loss reinsurance for Australian natural perils. Dr. Will Gardner is the founder and the managing director of Combus Private Limited, an actuarial consulting specializing in helping companies and managing, quantifying and managing the large-scale risk to natural and man-made disasters. Will has been building and using catastrophe models since 1994, have developed more than a dozen different international catastrophe models, and undertake catastrophe analysis of over 200 insurance and reinsurance company portfolios. Will is a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia and has a PhD in geophysics. Now, could you all please welcome Will on the stage?
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for coming along. This presentation will be pretty intense, so appreciate your attendance. Is anyone in the room, has anyone other than myself read the paper? Okay, one. Oh, we've got one up here. What I'll be doing is I'm effectively running through the paper in slide form, so it'll save you reading it, but if you want to refer back to it, it's available on the conference website. The agenda for today, I'm going to cover the paper. We've got, I'm going to start just talking about the Australian natural perils and how I've kind of grouped them. Things that influence the frequency, and then using a contagion on a Poisson distribution as a way to model that. Then talk a little bit about convolution and the methodology that I'm using to do pricing of CAT XOL layers in a non-simulation manner. And then finally kind of demonstrate how to do that. So hopefully you'll keep your concentration like this guy. All right, to start with, the Insurance Council list is a very good starting point for any kind of disaster analysis model in Australia. It's a database available from the ICA. It goes back to 1967. The full list is only available to members at the moment, I think, but you can get the last 10 years, and they've got this nice interface on the side. As I said, it's a good starting point because there are a lot of problems with it. So what I've done is I've gone back through that list. There's about 210 events or something like that in there. I've gone in and added another 200 or so events that along the way just got taken off the list for one reason or another. Also, you know, a lot of events that were never made it in there. They may have been significant weather events, but weren't necessarily an event that was recorded as a big insurance loss at that time. So I've added about 200 events. So that's my starting point for the next part of analysis. Then I've gone through and I've looked at all of the different perils and tried to work out what is actually in each event. Now, the big thing here is how you define a peril versus how you define a sub-peril, okay? So looking at some of these events, the first one's the Brisbane floods, that's how it's listed, from 1974. It was actually from Tropical Cyclone Wanda. So it was a cyclone that had flood, but it also had a bit of wind in it too. There was a bit of wind damage, but the majority of it came from the flooding. The 2007 Hunter storm, that was the one where you saw that the Pasha Bolka, the boat up on the beach. That had a lot of wind, but also flood and obviously storm surge. So you can see the trend here, and there's different events, and there's a meteorological event happening, and then within that you've got all these sub-perils. So you don't just have like a flood event. It's usually an event with something else happening in addition to flood. So the way I look at it is like a two-way table. So you've got your perils down the left-hand side and then your sub-perils going across. So depending on the event type, so tropical cyclone, you'd have in the event, you'd have wind, you'd have flood. Not likely to get hail in a cyclone normally. And then some storm surge. You may get tornadoes in them as well. So currently out there, there are flood models available, and they're great for pricing individual risks. Because when you're not really caring where the flood comes from, you're kind of saying, does this property have a flood risk, yes or no, and what is the return period of that flood? But when you're looking at catastrophe excess of loss pricing, you need to simulate the actual event. So you need to take it back to what was the actual peril that caused the event. So the breakdown I've got for Australia, we have earthquake, we have bushfire, and then these three other categories of peril, tropical cyclone, severe convective storms, and low pressure systems. This chart shows of the, I think it was 359 events that I analysed, how many were in each category, and the proportion of the total losses rescaled to 1st of January 2016. So it's interesting to see that the severe convective storm is the biggest driver of these loss events. However, it is possible that you would get an extreme event, even though there's not many earthquakes on there. A big earthquake could be bigger than anything that we've ever had in Australia. So just on this middle category, the low pressure systems, that includes things like southern ocean lows, east coast lows, easterly troughs, west coast troughs, and as I was looking at these east coast lows, I was asked the question, you know, can we get an event that goes all the way from Australia to New Zealand? And what we did, we went back and analysed every event in the ICA list and put that next to every event in the New Zealand Insurance Council list. And what we found was there were no events that actually caused losses in Australia and New Zealand. However, there were plenty of events that looked like they could have, and on a meteorological sense, it could happen. So I think the lesson here is if you're doing reinsurance, to get your wording right, so that if you're covering an event that could hit both countries in one effort, it could happen. So the key takeaway of this is just the way I do it, defining the event by the underlying peril, and then underneath that you model all your different subcategories of sub-peril. This is a still from a video that's on YouTube. It's some guy trying to protect his car from hail, and he's flailing around. It's quite funny. But, okay, so getting into the influence on the influence of global weather systems. A lot of this has been done before, and I haven't invented this or anything. I've just done an analysis to show that it can happen. So the whole thing is we're looking at these different weather system, or global weather systems as you call them, and then look at the impact on the frequency. And basically what they do is they make the frequency non-Poisson, okay? So this handsome gentleman is Simeon Denis Poisson. Everyone in the room knows what the Poisson distribution is. I don't know if you use it every day like I have been. But the basic concept is you have one event at a time. Event's independent, and the probability of an event happening is proportional to the time. And the problem is Australian events don't seem to match this, which is important when you're looking at third and fourth event covers, right? And I gave a cut-down version of this presentation at the reinsurance rendezvous a month ago, and I was told at that one they are drinkers, not thinkers. So I demonstrated it with this concept here. So you've got a bunch of people going into a pub, and they are random how they come in, but they're generally, you know, proportional to time. And there's Daniel Smith at the front running through, the first guy there. And so that's a Poisson process. And here's a non-Poisson process. Daniel's still first in the door, but everyone else is coming in groups. Okay, so that's the basic concept. And I'm not modelling the clustering here, like, you know, of like one event straight after the other. What I'm talking about is the annual frequency going up or down, and over a long period of time, it's not Poisson in how it's distributed. Okay, so here's a chart from a book by Nealon, and it actually draws from another paper, but what they're showing here is along the bottom you've got the Niño 3.4 sea surface temperature anomaly, and then up the side on the left you've got the frequency of Atlantic hurricanes, and you can see here, not sure how this works. Yeah, just the trend here, and so in a La Niña year, you're getting more Atlantic hurricanes, and in El Niño, less. The correlation's not real good. It's at 40% there that they come up with, but I mean, this has been well documented. There's a lot of work goes into this in the US. So I tried to do the same thing in Australia. So the first one I looked at was the Indian Ocean Dipole. Kevin Ferguson is going to present a bit more on this tomorrow, and he'll talk a bit more about what each one is. So I won't go into the details, but the point here is that the Bureau of Meteorology is saying that this is one of the most important drivers of weather in Australia. And then I looked at the four sub-perils, sorry, the four perils above ground. So bushfire, severe convective storm, low-pressure systems and cyclones. And what I did was I went back through 50 years of data of each of those indices, and I broke it into, so that's 600 months. Is it? Yeah, 50 times, yeah, 600 months. So then I broke it into 60 equal bands of the index. And so you've got your 10 bands of 60 months, right? going across here, and within each one, how many bushfires, how many severe convective storms, etc., happened, and then rescaled it to one. So if you had a clear trend here, you would see probably a steeper line, or at least a higher correlation coefficient. So in this case, for the IOD, there's almost no correlation at all on the bushfires, and not a lot on some of the other ones. So I thought, okay, I'll go look at all the other types of indices. So the Southern Oscillation Index, it gets some higher correlation on the low pressure systems there. You can see 77%. The Southern Annular Mode, 46% on the severe convective. NINO 3.4, which is the one that that paper used for the Atlantic hurricanes. It's interesting here, it gets this kind of quadratic fit. It gets a better correlation there. And I tested this out with a couple of international former colleagues, one at Swiss Re, one in Impact Forecasting, and they both thought this made sense on a meteorological basis, that two senior meteorologists in those two companies. So I can't explain it myself, but the concept is you get more severe convective storms when the NINO's in an extreme, either one way or the other. And the MEI, which is a multivariate, it's a combination of a whole bunch of them. You can see there a much better correlation on the tropical cyclone. This is the best fits for each peril. So we don't really get a good fit on the bushfire. And the severe convective storms are polynomial. But what I'm trying to show here is I'm not making a model for this fit. I'm just showing you that there is definitely a trend. And so what you want to say is, like, say for tropical cyclone, when it's in a... What's that? That's a La Nina. So we've got La Nina that side, El Nino that side. When it's in a La Nina, you're looking here, intersects there at about 80% increase. So in a La Nina, you're 80%, you get a high frequency by about 80%. So it varies for each index. Right, so low pressure systems, it increases by about 50%. So the key takeaway here is there are influences of these things. But the relationship isn't capturing all the variability. You can see those correlation coefficients weren't too high. I love this slide. I reckon that picture. It was a good effort, whoever found that one. Okay, so now I'm going to get quite brutal with the stats. So close your eyes if you don't like this kind of stuff. But the basic concept is what I'm doing is I'm modelling a Poisson distribution and I'm changing the frequency in each simulation. So each year, you'd say the frequency might have, on average, it might have 6.5 events. And what we're doing is we're going to have like a high year and we're going to have low years. So, you know, in your high year, your frequency might go up to 9.5 and your low, it's down to 3.5. In this example, I've given each of those an equal weight. And then you end up with this distribution here, which is the mixed distribution or the smeared distribution or the contagion distribution. And the contagion term was, I think, first coined by Heckman and Myers in one of their papers back in the 70s. The reason I use that methodology is that the contagion is a description of the amount of smearing as opposed to the mixing distributions, which are focused on actually changing the parameter of the Poisson. Okay, so by contagion, it always has a mean of one or average of one, and then it has some kind of standard deviation around that. All right, so you're taking what you would normally have run as a Poisson, and then you're adding your contagion on top of that. So there's your old Poisson distribution that you will have remembered from first year stats. And then down the bottom, I've got the contagion distribution U, where U goes from zero to infinity, and it's got an average of one. So what I'm doing now is playing around with different functions for U. And again, this is in the paper, but if you go look at a linear fit, like the one on the low pressure systems here, and you say that height there is y, make that your parameter y, so that's your measure of contagion, then your function is that. Again, it goes from 1 minus y to 1 plus y. And then you whack it all in here and end up with this beautiful thing here, which is trying to think what they call it, a lower gamma function, which is the integral from naught to the value. And you can check that on Wolfram Alpha if you don't believe that it works. If you have a quadratic, the formula gets more complex, and it translates down to this beautiful one here. And I don't think there's any errors there, but if anyone finds one, please let me know. And the other one, I think people may remember from the textbook, what was it, Hossack, Pollard and Zenworth. If you take a gamma fit, that's what the gamma looks like in that same way. And I couldn't get a gamma to fit any of the distributions of the data I had, by the way. But if you do a gamma, it ends up as this one, which is a negative binomial. Okay, a lot of people use negative binomials in their simulation, and it's implying that you fit something like that, which I don't think it usually is. But anyway, that's the concept there. So to do these wacky formulas, they're pretty hard to program. The easier way is just to, in Excel, everyone here knows how to use Excel, right? You do your Poisson in one column as just your normal mean, so like whatever your frequency is, 6.5, and you have, you know, zero events, 1, 2, 3. It's easy to calculate the probability density of that. And then across you have your U values, and you might want to just have 10 bands, or you might want to have 100, and then you use that scaling factor to change your frequency and do the modified column of probabilities, and then you just add them all up with whatever weights you want to put on them, and you end up with your overall distribution of frequency. It's easier to do in Excel, takes about 3 minutes. And I was just showing here the difference in the calculations. So your Poisson in the first column, and then I think this is with the 50% plus or minus mix, you get a change to that equation 5 number. If you run 10 bands, the number's there to about 2 decimal places. If you run 100 bands, which is just cut and paste across, you get it out to 5 decimal places, which is 6 decimal places, so it's pretty close. So it's an easy way to do it, and there should be no problems with doing that. So the key takeaway here is that these global weather systems modify the frequency, and it's pretty easy to implement that to come up with your own new statistical distribution. And I'm recommending not to have a formula method, just to actually have the values, all right? I don't know what to say about that lady in the bath. Okay, now we're going to go a little bit further on the actual excess of loss reinsurance. So this is just setting the, you know, defining the parameters here. You've got your standard loss. So G is your gross event loss, net of deductibles and enduring reinsurance. You've got a layer where you've got your attachment and your limit. And there's a simple formula for your X being your loss to a layer, your occurrence loss to a layer. If you're looking at aggregate claims in a particular layer in reinsurance, excess of loss, you add them up, and the mean is just the frequency average times the severity average, and the variance is that formula at the bottom. All right. If it's a Poisson distribution, okay, a couple of terms eliminate, and you end up with that. If it's a contagioned Poisson, where V is the coefficient of variation, it all translates out to this formula, which is the same as that, plus this term, which is kind of interesting. So if you're looking at a particular layer, you can see the impact of adding the contagion, what it'll do to your volatility within that layer. And that's important for when you're doing pricing. In the old-fashioned method, before we did capital calcs, where you would actually say mean plus some constant times standard deviation as a standard reinsurance pricing tool. Turns out a lot of reinsurers still do that, which I was quite surprised to find out recently. Just talking about these layers, though, in Australia, we've got the APRA regulation of holding capital for 3 1 in 10 events or 4 1 in 6 events. So since that, even before that, people started buying covers for multiple events. So you've got like a layer diagram like this. These first and second columns will go right up to 1 in 200, but then people will buy reinsurance out to the side. And they're buying them, in some cases, down to an event that's happening twice a year. That's the level of retention that they're getting. If you look at the Suncorp and IAG towers, which are public record, they're in the shareholder briefings, you can see that they're doing that, and you can see the history of their claims, that they are hitting those layers all the time. Right. So the way I'm defining this diagram is basically the return period of layers up the side here. So I've said that layer, for example, is one that attaches at 6 years, and then blows out the top once every 10 years, and then you've got your first event, second event, third event, all right? Everyone cool so far? Everyone still alive? I haven't killed anyone, okay? The problem with just doing your standard deviation is you're shifting across, but you need to model these layers independently, and you need to allow for the fact that you've got, you know, the probability of hitting the layer and then the probability of getting across as well, Okay, so you've got to get to that top one, you've got to get to that point, and you've got to get there at least four times to get across to that one. Okay, so there's a whole methodology requiring to get to the calculation of that, right? So the method that most people have been using, in my experience in the last few years, and I don't know if reinsurance brokers are in the room other than Bo, most people just use simulation for this. And someone was proudly telling me recently how they can now run a million simulations and it's done on three computers and it only takes 2 days. And they're really good. And that was cool. So if you're looking at that layer up there, okay, it's got a 1 in 6 chance of attachment. And the probability of four or more events, if you're just saying a Poisson, is that number, right? So proudly they've run 3 days of three computers and they've ended up with a million simulations. That layer's only been hit 28 times in that calculation. And so if you go back to, your first year maths or first year stats, you end up with a simulation error of as proportional to 1 on square root of n, plus or minus 19%. And I don't think that's really acceptable. So I thought, okay, let's see if I can come up with a method that gets me an answer closed form. Might be quicker. So I went back to the old Hart, Buchanan and Howe textbook, and it had these ones in there, normal approximation, et cetera, et cetera. But all of these require a closed form distribution, both for the frequency and the severity. And the CAT model outputs, event loss tables, never match a real severity distribution, so that one doesn't really work, or none of those work. Pange's recursion is pretty cool. The methodology with this, it requires the frequency distribution to be able to follow this trend, and he shows in his paper about the negative binomial and the Poisson can do that. But remember, we've done this kind of wacky contagion Poisson that doesn't have a distribution, so that doesn't work on it. Okay, and I just thought at this point, just wake people up. I'll tell you the worst actuarial joke ever. All right, I was at a conference a few years back in the States, and I sat next to Harry Panger, and they had a after-dinner speaker, and the after-dinner speaker went on for about an hour, and at the end, when he finished, everyone ran off to go to the toilet, and there was a long line, and Panger said to me, "This is the only time I know when P equals Q minus 1. Think about it. I said it was the worst. Actually, I think it's the second worst, because I heard another worst one last night, but who was that that said it? I can't remember now. Yeah, down the back there. Jeff's going to say it later, right? Okay, so there is a way to do it with recursion. So the way you model it is you... How am I going for time? Okay, so what we do here is we're calculating the loss distribution, G, for the layer that we're trying to hit, right? And so what we're saying is we're going to sum up for all the possible occurrence frequencies the convoluted distribution of claims that are hitting that layer, okay? So the probability that there's one claim and the distribution of hitting that layer, and that one I showed you would be zero because it has to be at least four. But then you add all of those up, right? And they call it the n-fold convolution, right? And to get to the convolution, you use this formula. So you start with one event and then you add it to another one. It's like when you roll dice and you're playing craps and you roll two dice. So you've got a 1 and a 6, a 1 and a 5, 1 and a 4, and you end up with this distribution that adds up to 12. So you do the same thing with your event calculation, and you convolute those up, and then the calculation can take a while, but if you program it right, it doesn't. And at the end of the day, you end up with this distribution, which is pretty cool. So this is the algorithm, and it's in the paper if you want to read it, but I did a lot of trial and error to come up with the most efficient methodology here. So at the end of the day, I got this thing working and it does run, and we do get answers that are accurate and without any simulation error, and it's pretty cool. So, yeah, again, a test of concentration. That's what the next test will be like if Australia goes any worse. I think the grandstands will be on fire. Yeah, so you can use a recursive process to determine the losses in a timely manner. Now, what do I mean by timely manner? Like 3 days is not good enough for me. I'd like to have it in the time I could make a cup of coffee. That'd be a good time. So I started recently programming using graphics processes. I wrote some code to do this, and I tested it. First, I did it in Excel with Visual Basic, the VBA. And that's how long it took in seconds. And I switched it to VB.net, and it didn't run any faster. It was mainly because of the input-output. C-sharp was way quicker. This is time in seconds again. C++, which is a horrible language, but if you I hadn't ever used it before August. I've had to learn it. And C-sharp, I'd never used that either. And then I started using these graphics processors. And you know when you see all these super games, you know, Halo, etc. If you run them on a PC, the better graphics card you get, the better your gaming experience. But it turns out the you can take all your processing that you would normally do in your central processing unit, shift it onto your graphics card, and it'll run thousands of times faster. So I don't know anyone using this in insurance terms yet. If anyone is, please let me know. But it's incredible speed improvements. So you can see that was about 125 times. There's different runs here. Then I discovered that within that, it's based on how many cores the thing's got. I bought a $3,000 laptop from Harvey Norman, and it's got a certain number of cores. At a point, it kind of flatlines. It doesn't get any quicker, but it managed to increase the speed by 1,800 times. I thought that was pretty impressive. So that thing that took a broker 3 days on 3 computers now runs on my machine in 3 seconds. So I think that's... I can't even make a cup of coffee in that time. So... anyway, so I'm just going to just finish up with an example here. So this is that same structure I showed before. I want to point out that I'm experienced it enough to know that reinsurance pricing is not done on expected losses. Okay, you can calculate your expected losses, but it really it's a combination of market rates and kind of capital things on top of that, and also looking at what your loss experience is. So I'd say at the moment the expected loss is probably only influencing about 20% of the price. Okay, there's a lot of other things on top, right? But pretending you do want to have it, because you might want to look at different types of deals and say, oh, what if we try this? What if we try whatever? So you do want to get an accurate representation of your expected loss. So I've got an average industry exposure portfolio. I ran my cat models on all of those. I came up with an event loss table, and I plugged it into this thing. And there's your PML curve, probable maximum loss, and your return period. And then I calculated the expected loss hitting each of these layers with a Poisson, okay? So you can do the calculations here, e to the minus whatever. I think the frequency here is 2.5. At the end of the day, you end up with a number. And what I'm going to look at here is this layer. This is... I apologise for those ones being zero. In the paper, I've got them in there as scientific notation so you can read them to all the decimals. But there's a value there, 0.6. Now I'm going right back to the start where I talked about the contagion. So I'm adding the contagion of plus or minus 50%, and that 0.6% becomes 0.9%. Okay, so what you're getting is a shifting when you add the contagion of the expected losses across to the right as it moves out, because you're getting more in the tail, so more likelihood of there being more events, but you're also getting more likelihood of there being zero events. Because for the tail to fatten out, the head has to fatten as well of the distribution, right? And the body gets thinner. So the increase here from 0.6 to 0.9 is shown in this chart. So there's that 0.9 again. And in that case, it's gone up 40%. So that's your increase. And you don't see this when you do simulations because it comes out of the simulation. There's so much randomness there that people have been ignoring this. But if you add this contagion in, it can add quite a lot onto the pricing of your Cat XOL, and that's the 50% on the low pressure systems. If you look at the 80% on the cyclone, it goes up a lot more. So you're doubling your price at that fourth layer. So I don't know I do know at the moment that most of it's coming out of, you know, your market and your experience. But if you were basing it on expected loss, it should be getting much higher numbers. So the final takeaway there is the variability due to the weather patterns increases the technical prices. I showed how to do the calculations of the frequency and of the severity and how to get it done in 3 seconds, which I think is pretty handy. And I'll finish with my last slide on the worst disaster I've ever seen in Australia. And it's not, I'm not talking about Ash Wednesday. I'm talking about that person's mullet just there. I think that's actually a guy. So... with that, I'll say thank you very much and take any questions.
No, there's a mic in the middle of the room, so if you don't mind, speak up to the mic or for questions.
Did you find an error on page something?
Yeah, well, I just missed the bit. You said that the Poisson distribution had 6.5 events per year on average, and your contagion process then has some years with 3.5, some with 9.5, and I get how it all adds up. So what's the way in which you assign years to be low, high, medium? I think did you just say that you assumed 1/3 of each?
No. That was just you're referring to this slide with the three. That was just a simple example explaining the concept where I would have a high, medium, low.
Yep.
What I'm doing, though, instead of just having, you know, a third, a third, a third, I'm doing more complex distributions for you. So in that case, you would just be point 0.33 with this point, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm doing is actually putting a closed form distribution to it, as opposed to one or the other. So I would be modelling, say, over, you know, 100 or a million samples or whatever, if I was sampling.
Yeah.
In some cases, the frequency would be reduced. And I'd be randomly picking a point off this distribution and then smearing or contagioning the Poisson by that. So, you know, I might take a random sample, the random value is 0.85, and in that case, whatever that number is, maybe a 30% increase on the Poisson in that year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah? So there is, like you would propose using simulation for that part of the process.
What you would do if you were going to, here's a closed form way. If you wanted to sample and build a yearly loss table, what you would do is use a stratified sample methodology, so like a Holton sequence, a quasi Monte Carlo. So you'd get like it'd look random, but it's not really, and you get a proper convergence on it. So that's how I do my yearly loss tables now. So I simulate like 100,000 years, randomly sample the value, randomly sample the contagion for the four different perils. That way they're cross correlated as well, and then you sample off your Poisson with each of those once you've done the first step.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, so looking at your slides there, it looks like the horizontal requirement from APRA then is super conservative if they're over 99.5. Did you try simulating with an assumption around the level of kind of correlation between events or how extreme the kind of clustering would have to be for that to become a reasonable 99.5 assumption?
Yeah, it's impossible.
Right.
Okay. It's impossible to get to that. I think it's more like a 2,000 or 3,000 year event.
Right. And even no matter how kind of extreme you pushed it, you had to get to ridiculous length.
There's a point where the distribution bathtubs, and you just can't go any further.
Right, okay.
Yeah, the maximum standard deviation on that is square root of mu times 1 minus mu or something like that. There's a point where it caps out. So there's no way to get to the 1 in 200 APRA requirement.
So we should go back to APRA and...
Yeah, long story, which I'll tell you over drinks tonight about that. But yeah,
forward to it.
That's how they did it. That's a 5-minute warning.
Any more questions?
Back.
Well, maybe I'll throw one in.
Yeah, cool.
I realize the presentation on frequency. Have you got any thoughts on how the changes in the weather pattern globally have impacted the severity as well?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. But I will say Tim Andrews did a great presentation a month ago. Is Tim here? No. It was at the... there was like a webinar, and I think you go to the Institute website and download it. Tim talks about the impact of global warming and what it will do with frequency and severity in Australia. And I think, from memory, he said that the frequency will reduce if the Earth warms, but the severity of events will be larger. And he showed scientific reason for each of those steps. It was a pretty good presentation. It only goes for half an hour. You should watch it. Or broker? Is anyone still using simulation? Yes. All right, cool.
Well, I guess we're just concluding the session now.
And thank you for giving us this good presentation.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for your time.